Morning.
Morning, how's it going?
Yeah, good, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad.
I realise we start the podcast in the same way every time. How are you? Good. How are you? Not bad.
Have a stock intro.
Yeah. We don't need like a shitty jingle or anything when we've got that.
Yeah, my Apple Watch just started talking to me, don't know why. I must have said something that sounded like, hey doofus.
Is there a way of turning down the volume of Siri on the Apple Watch?
I don't think so.
It's
no.
So much louder. It's really like annoying sometimes.
Yeah, and I'm finding just in general things going on in conversations, whatever, that she fires a lot more than she used to.
I've never had her fire since I've had the Siri before.
It's usually, I think the last time it happened, I said something like serious. I said something like, I must have said something
serious?
Like... Yeah, I must have said, yeah, why so serious? I must have said something before it that sounded like the hey, and then she just started talking. And it's hysterical sometimes, especially when you activate it without hearing, like you've activated the watch because you sort of bent your wrist or something. You've activated it without realizing you've activated it, and then you're talking away or something's on TV or whatever. Then you look at your watch and there's all this crap all over the screen because she's sort of picking up everything. I think I said this once before where she started up or something while I was trying to talk to someone. I was like, shut up, you shit, or something. And it came up on all the words, you know, all the words. It was like I was, I think I was narrating a message or something. So I was, sending a message to someone. And I was, oh, crap, or something, I swore. And it picked it all up. Because that's the only thing that annoys me about dictation stuff is, I don't know if I've said this before, but there used to be a bit of software years ago called, remember Drag and Dictate?
Yeah.
It was like one of the first. And what was cool about it is you ran on a PC at the time, and you could, you know, it was quite gimmicky trying to write a letter with it. It wasn't brilliant, but it was pretty good. But one of the nice things you could do was if you made a mistake, you could say, correct that. And it would highlight the last word. And then you could just say another word and it would replace it. Or delete last sentence. You know, there were certain words you can say. And it seems like when you're narrating or dictating a message to Siri, you know, it understands like full stop, question mark, exclamation mark. But you can't sort of say, you know, delete that word or whatever. And it just makes it really frustrating when you've sort of dictated a message, it's worked really, really well, but like the last word you've dictated, you know, it just halfway through this really long message that's worked perfectly, it's cocked it up and then you can't easily correct it without typing. And that just annoys me a little bit. Just wish that would be better.
See, I remember having, I think it was Lotus Notes or like their version of Word.
Oh, yeah.
And that had a load of dictation stuff built in, and you trained it by putting a headset on, and you basically read it the story Alice in Wonderland, like the whole book, and that's how it trained itself to know what your voice sounded like. I remember sitting there for like 3 hours reading it a fucking book.
I think Drag and Dictate did something like that, but it was like poems and things. But that reminds me, that's literally just reminded me of, remember, was it Mission Impossible 3? The one where Philip Seymour Hoffman's in it. And they do the mask thing, and he's sort of Ethan appears out of nowhere looking like him, gets him to the ground, and then shows him a sort of card with a story on it, and he's got to read it because he's trying to train the voice system, and he's just got to say these ridiculous phrases, you know, over and over, and then as he says it, it's like calculating it, and then he can now simulate the voice. Yeah, it's really funny. That reminded me of that. But yeah, I remember doing that. I think if you use something like TomTom app or whatever it is, and you want your own custom directions, I think Waze might do it as well. You can do a similar thing, but you've got to sit there and record all the different statements, and then you can have your own voice as the voice on there. But yeah, I know what you mean. It's like getting, I guess it was like training the way you might say different words, or you might say the same word in different ways based on where it is in the sentence or something like that. You know, just different ways you might. Because it's a bit like the speaking clock, isn't it? If you tried to record the numbers 1 to 60, you know, in one go, you'd be like 1, 2, 3, which then makes them sound weird.
It doesn't
sound
right.
Yeah, and so when they do the speaking clock, they do it a different method to make sure that every time it's correct. So you don't get those things, you know, when you phone movie lines. You know, you've picked to see Hotel Transylvania. And it's on at 4 o'clock and stuff like that. But
I don't think I've ever phoned a cinema since about the late 90s.
Those are just, yeah. Anything like that just drives me. Who did I have to phone recently? I can't remember. Where I had to go through. BT were always the worst, those menu systems. And you had to go through several levels. Yeah. And then you'd finally get to this level, like you know, right down the rabbit hole, all the way down. And then it would go, this information is on our website. No! It's like so annoying. When someone came up with all the things you could bang on the keys, you could bang the numbers. There was like special codes you could bang or certain things you could press that would just overload the system, and then it would say, we're putting you through to someone, because it couldn't understand. It either thought you were an idiot, or it just lost interest, or you'd press the special code or something.
It's like now, where you just keep pressing zero repeatedly, yes, whenever you're on one of those systems.
Yeah, and you always, it doesn't matter what you say. If you say billing or you say thing, they pretty much always put you through to the right person. You know, you can just say, yeah, it's a technical problem, and you go through to someone, and you can talk to them about billing. When in the last business, when we had the first business, which was like the big team and everything, we there was like online service you could use that would do this thing where you could create this menu system. And we sort of did it. I guess we did it in a way to be annoying as well, to sort of get people to email us or whatever. But basically you'd say, you know, do you have an iPass issue? Press one. Do you have a web issue? Press two. And you do all this different thing. When it came through to us, it came through to the same phone, it came through to the same person. It didn't matter. And it didn't really come up on the phone and say, this person's got a web issue.
It's just to make it look more.
Yeah, it was all bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, yeah.
So, what news has there been?
Well, there's been a couple of things that got me going. There was the
surely yeah, not Jason.
No,
not you.
No. The biggest one, I think, was when the got to remember how to say this correctly. 10S came out.
Yep.
And the 10R is due out soon, isn't it? Next week or so.
Yeah, I think it's next week. Tomorrow, I think.
There was that typical thing where YouTubers, you know, basically anybody who's paid per view wants to find some sort of scandal that they can get out, yep, there. And this guy put something out saying there's a massive problem with this phone because basically it's beautifying. It's got a beautify mode.
Yes.
So this is taking, you know, comparing the 10 to the 10S, two phones that, despite the fact that it wasn't, well, I think it was mentioned in the slides, but a lot of people think it wasn't mentioned at the keynote, that it is a different camera, that it is a better sensor, that it is fundamentally a better picture taker. Basically, this guy's taken photos with the year-old version, the new version, and then says, you know, it's definitely doing something to my face. It's changing something, it's smoothing something, you know, there's a beauty mode, and they haven't told us about it, and you can't deactivate it. Which, of course, everybody then gets on board. Lazy news sites just republish the same thing because it says Apple in it. It's going to get you clicks and sell ads. Yep. And all of a sudden, Apple are being accused of adding this fake beauty mode and not giving people, you know, the outrage is that we haven't been given the option. You know, our photos, we look nicer in our photos, damn you, and we don't want to. we want to choose to be shit looking. but it actually turns out it was all bullshit and there's no beauty mode. It's just a different camera. It's a different photographic process. It could be part of the smart HDR process as well. It just takes a better picture, basically. So it was all bullshit and all nothing. But all these things sell clicks and views, and that's why this stuff happens. You know, and people go crazy about it. There was another more serious issue about charging, which I didn't get, but my wife got with hers. If you plugged I don't think it was wireless. I think it was just. If you plugged a lightning connector in, it would. I mean, mine did take like, you know, half a second or a second to sort of suddenly go, I'm charging, but it always did it. Hers, she'd get it where she'd plug it in, just wouldn't charge, nothing would happen. Which apparently they fixed in a software update. So
yeah, that got fixed. I mean, the interesting thing about that, and I mentioned it last time, is that I have a Belkin Caddy thing which has lightning port and an Apple Watch thing on it, so you can put both together, and my XS does not charge in that at all.
Oh.
It just doesn't work on it. It will charge a little bit and then it stops, like literally for like 5 seconds on, 5 seconds off, 5 seconds off, 5 seconds off. I tried it with a different one, still didn't work because I have two of them, and then Belkin put out a statement saying, yeah, it's not compatible with the XS. Doesn't say why. I can't understand why.
That's
either.
Just weird.
And I was hoping that that fix would fix that as well, but it hasn't. Weird. Yeah,
because it's the same. It's the same shell. It's the same connector. It's the same. It's not
it's
like
the lightning charger.
Yes, it's not like the. It's not like the lightning port's deeper and the thing can't fit properly or something. It's just very, very
really
strange.
Weird. really weird.
So, I mean, I had a weird charging thing, slightly related, which I tweeted about. It's not in our notes, but I tweeted about it yesterday or the day before. The Nest smoke alarm. So I was sitting in the office, and it's happened a couple of times, but it happened when I was actually in the office. Suddenly, my smoke detector behind me just goes, smoke detected in the office. Warning, smoke detected in the office. I'm like, okay, I'm not seeing anything. I'm not spraying myself with anything. I'm not showering or doing anything weird like that, which could set it off. So, you know, blow in it, press the button to stop the alarm going off, check the app and everything. And it's saying change the batteries. And then all of a sudden it starts doing that annoying thing where they start beeping every sort of 10 seconds, you know, that high pitch, very short beep to say that the batteries need changing. So take the cover off. Batteries are these, they're normal batteries, but they're, what are they called? Energizer, like silver batteries. And so I take them out, put some other energizer I've got, which were rechargeables, and it just keeps doing this beeping. So it's powered, but it just keeps doing this beeping. So I'm thinking, okay, the batteries aren't charged. So go and find some other batteries, still not working. So I tweet about it, and then someone comes back to me and says, I had this issue, can't remember his name, but thanks for the message, where he said, I think you have to use the specific AA battery, which is an Energizer Ultimate. So I'm like, what? Huh. What?
That is weird.
Yeah, so I go,
this
okay.
This Nest fire alarm.
Yep. So I order some, and I tweeted about it saying this is a bit crazy. Nest then chime in saying, yes, you have to use Energizer Ultimate 1.5 batteries, AA batteries. They're the only ones that will work in it. So they did. I mean, long story short, they did. I got some of them arrived, plugged them in, the thing starts working again. But I tweeted them back, and they've said they're going to forward it for, you know, to their team. It's like, this isn't a toy.
How the hell would you know that?
Yeah, this isn't a toy. Why? This is your app literally could just say, your batteries need replacing. Please use these batteries only. These are the only batteries that will work. It's just a label in an app. And it's a label in an app for a product that is designed to save your life. So I basically had to have no fire alarm in the office for 24 hours while I was waiting for these batteries to arrive, because I couldn't just go down the corner shop and buy these specific batteries because I didn't have them.
Huh.
And it's just ridiculous. And all for one little statement. But, yeah, I mean, it's just
really weird. I've never heard of that. I mean,
exactly.
I've got two of the powered Nest smoke alarm things.
Right.
Which I put in there fine. And then I've got one battery-powered one, but I've never had any issues with the batteries on it.
Very weird.
I've just got Amazon Basics in it. I don't think I've got anything special.
And I think it's the 1.5. Is it 1.5 amps, I think? So it's 1.5, but the Duracells I put in said 1.5. So as far as I know, an AA battery is 1.5 amps.
It should just be a battery, shouldn't it?
So, yeah, the Ultras, and I think whether you get these sort of Ultras or Ultimates, whatever, I thought was just maybe they've packed more power into it somehow. You know, it delivers those amps, but in a better way or something to last longer. I don't know the technicalities, but if it is a different amperage, then surely you can't plug that into a, you know, if a device is expecting a certain amperage and these ones are way more, then that could blow the item. I mean, that it's just very bizarre,
very but, yeah, very odd.
Again, an example of something that doesn't make any sense why it doesn't work, but could have been. It sounds like the Belkin thing should work. That just literally makes no sense.
Yeah,
weird. No, it can't be that. I was wondering whether
it should all be MFI as well. I mean, that's like £100. It's not like it's some cheap knockoff thing from Amazon with a lightning port on it. It's, you know, it's a legit MFI branded Belkin thing that they were selling in the Apple Store.
It couldn't be some absolute nonsense bullshit that for some reason the MFI bit and the intelligence that goes into these things means that it's somehow hard coded to the 10 backwards, do you know what I mean? That they wouldn't have anticipated that a new phone would come out and somehow when you plug something in that it doesn't recognise it won't charge it. That shouldn't be a thing, should it?
No, I wouldn't have thought so.
Yeah. It's the only thing I can think of. It's very weird.
Yeah. I thought the only thing I could think is it would be a software thing on the 10S. Yeah. Like it doesn't want to work with certain devices or whatever, but you should be able to whitelist them or do something, but who knows? But it sounds like they're not going to fix it, so it's a lot of people are pissed off, because obviously, you know, it's not a cheap charger.
No.
You spent £100 on it a month ago for your iPhone 8 that it worked with, and now it doesn't work with your iPhone XS, you'd be pretty pissed off.
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah. I mean, the only thing I'd suggest is do the old classic Amazon swap as soon as they come out with a new one that works.
Oh, yeah.
Buy it and swap it.
I've had mine for years, though. I mean, I'm not going to be able to do anything with them now, but I've had mine for about 4 years, but be annoying if you had just bought one. But
the only issue
that I've had.
The other story was the hacking story, which isn't, well, it is interesting, but it's another example of bullshit news. Bloomberg posted this story about how these little chips had been put into servers, and these servers were in Amazon and Apple and Google nonsense. And everywhere, and somehow this chip, the smaller than a fingernail, somehow attached to a motherboard when the motherboard was made, could somehow relay all your data and stuff somewhere, which is incredible, because if they can do all that technology in a chip that small, they should be buying those chips and putting them in phones, because that's space age technology. That is basically someone at Bloomberg, I think, fell asleep in front of the TV while it was playing Mission Impossible and woke up thinking all that was real, basically, because it just, and it's pretty much been debunked by everybody. There's a few people that said, oh, there could be elements of truth, i.e. it wasn't a chip but it was something else. But basically, yeah. Apple, Google, I think Google have, Amazon definitely have all come out with statements, which is pretty unprecedented, saying this is just bullshit. Essentially, you know, we told them it was bullshit when they came to us a year ago. this has never happened. This didn't happen. This is just completely made up. And
Apple's rebuttal is quite
it is.
Harsh.
Yeah, it is. It is. And then I'd heard on another podcast and on Twitter that the follow-up to it was that a tech guy had come forward. He was like a security expert, had come forward, who, a bit like my falling asleep in front of the TV thing, this security guy basically said, well, I did an interview with Bloomberg ages ago where I talked to them about how this could be done. You know, you could hide a chip at manufacturing level. This chip could do key logging and things like that. I even gave them the images of what this chip could look like. And apparently they just took his, this could happen, this fictional account of what was possible, and wrote it as fact and used the same photo. So, yeah, just very weird. Apparently they've been working on it for a year. I mean, that just...
Yeah, I mean, someone's going to be in shit when, you know, when someone like Apple sues them.
Exactly, because that's the thing. That's the thing someone said. It's like, these sort of things could damage, you know, do damage public companies. You know, imagine stock price drop. I mean, that is
It did for Supermicro. Theirs went down by 50% to the extent that some people thought someone at Bloomberg was trying to
destroy
the market or whatever. Okay.
That's just an incredible amount of power that these people have. Just another crazy thing. And then the other thing that really bugged me was the bagel. This is the outrage that the new bagel emoji in iOS 12 apparently doesn't look like a bagel. It's not 100% accurate. And a few bagel companies came forward and bagel fans and all this sort of thing. And the thing that really pissed me off about it was the fact that no one complains about any other, you know, there's no flight engineers complaining about the blades on the helicopter emoji not being big enough to generate enough lift to get it up, or the houses looking too small to live in, or cars being too short. And, you know, it's just a ridiculous argument. And what's even more ridiculous is now Apple have obviously paid staff to redo the emoji in 12.1 beta so that it has cream cheese on it, and so it looks a bit more like a bagel. And then someone looked at it and went, why does it now look like a whole bagel on top of a half bagel? And it's like, oh my God. So, yeah, this just drives me crazy, this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, they must have an awful lot of designers on the emoji team, because they crank them out at a huge, huge pace now. But it is a bit silly, like the lengths that they go to. But then I guess, you know, it seems to be that emoji pretty much like drive adoption in a lot of ways. So if you look at like iOS 12, the adoption is crazy high. It's like 50% already. I think it might even be more by now. And a large part of that is because people want the latest emoji, which seems stupid to us maybe, but that's kind of just one of the big things these days, I guess.
Yeah. It's just, as soon as it becomes a Twitter moment and you're sort of in the Twitter app and you click on the search thing and see this as a moment, you know, people are outraged by the bagel emoji. You're just like, oh, this is like, you know, if anyone's ever looking down on us, or aliens are looking at us thinking, you know, how intelligent is this species? Just look at the Twitter
moments.
Yeah, just look at the Twitter moments. You know, it's like, don't worry about climate change. Don't worry about single-use plastics. Don't worry about it. You know, let's get outraged about bagel emojis. That's going to save the world. God.
I remember a while ago, it's kind of fun, like, I like the Emojipedia website where the guy is like,
I haven't seen that.
Shows you. Have you never been to Emojipedia?
No.
God, it's all the time.
Oh, it's just come up. That's a bit weird. I guess it's the only website with emoji in it, but it's the first thing that just comes up. Okay.
Yeah, it's a popular resource, but it shows you what emoji look like on different platforms and stuff. So if you click on any one of them, it'll show you. It has like histories of like the design changes and stuff, which is kind of interesting. They did a big thing a while ago, sort of pushing the fact that some emoji that you put on one platform look completely different on another. It's like the grimacing face looks like a smile on iOS, or it did, whereas now it doesn't, because they made a big thing about it. But it's quite interesting there, seeing like the differences between platforms. And there was a big thing a while ago about the whiskey glass, because Apple had done it right with like a nice Scotch glass with nothing in it. Some had put ice in. Microsoft's one looked like a Mr. Whippy ice cream. It was just awful.
Oh, the tumbler glass. Yeah, here it is.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, God, yes. Oh, Samsung looks...
Some of them are terrible.
Samsung looks like... Samsung looks like it's got a Mr. Whippy.
Yeah.
Twitter looks like it's got a sugar cube in it. Oh, my God. Yeah, the Apple one looks gorgeous. You just want a glass of that now.
The Apple one is way nicer. Way nicer than the other ones.
The Microsoft one looks bizarre.
Yeah, that's the one that looks like an ice cream, right?
It's like a... It's sort of... Yeah, well, it's like squared.
It's got like an iceberg in it.
No, the Samsung one looks like a little iceberg. The WhatsApp one looks a bit more like the Apple one, but not as nice. The Microsoft one looks like someone's put like a toy ice cube in it. You know, like one of these toy cubes that they've sort of dropped into a glass that... just seems really, really weird looking. Almost looks like a candle holder. It doesn't really look like a whiskey glass. It is weird how... It's almost like when they do these emojis, they're going, we mustn't copy Apple, or we mustn't copy X. You know, we've got to make it as different as possible. You know, like that concept that guy put forward for a new iPhone or whatever with the notch on the side. It was like, oh my God. You know, we've got to make this look different. You know, Jesus. And or any of the I can't even say the name, the Huawei or... Howie or whatever the phone company's called that just launched a new device where their notch is really tiny in the middle. It's like, we're going to copy it, but we need to make it look different. The Pixel 3 XL have done the same thing with this really deep notch, but only on the bigger model. It's all very odd. But yeah, stuff like this makes me laugh, because it's like the Microsoft one is clearly, we have to really make it look different, and they bloody have. It looks terrible. God. And it looks like it's a cube it looks like a cube buried in sand. It doesn't even look like a drink. It's terrible.
Yeah, it's not a good look.
That's a good site, though. I'll check that. I need to have a look through that.
It's got loads of good stuff on there.
Someone is actually maintaining this site. It's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, they post stuff all the time. I mean, there's literally... they are the place to go for all your emoji needs.
Not a sponsor. Emojipedia.org.
No. right. They have quite good articles. Like, whenever... there's like World Emoji Day, which is when everyone announces what emoji are coming next. I think we've already had an announcement of all the new ones that are coming in iOS 12.1. Again, it's a great way of getting people to upgrade. And they'll do like a article about it and show you like all the changes and how that has changed over time, etc. So it's a good site.
I'm just looking. They've got a post on the emoji, on the emoji, obviously. They've got a post on the Apple bagel emoji about it being changed. And then halfway down the article, they've got the different emojis for different people. So Apple have got their new one, which I just think looks terrible, because it almost looks more like a photo. It looks photorealistic, basically.
Yeah,
it's too weird. The Google one looks like the Google one looks like a donut. It looks like a Krispy Kreme. It doesn't look like a bagel at all. The Microsoft one, again, let's bloody go off completely crazy and make it look completely different. The Samsung one looks really unappealing. And the Twitter one looks like a burger. It sort of looks like one of those red burger buns with cream in it. But the Apple one, I don't like it. It looks like a photo, but it sort of looks like an emoji. But yeah, the new one just looks literally like a photo of a bagel. With the cream cheese has been done way too No one spreads cream cheese like that either, you know. Should be much more rougher than that, but anyway.
Who's using a bagel emoji?
Yeah, exactly.
It's not in my wheelhouse of usual, you know, ones that I would use.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, you, for me, it's normally face palm, smiley face, wink face, yeah. You know.
You use the face palm one a lot.
Face palm, yeah, I need to have a good shortcut for that. The face palm's good because if you don't want to get... Sometimes you'll get into issues on Twitter, but if you don't want to get into real issues on Twitter and have a lot of people, you know, if you don't want someone quoting your tweet who's got a lot of followers and then you get lots of hassle back, you can just do the face palm because it gets that sort of mood out of your system because you've just done the face palm. But sometimes they don't know how to take it, so they don't know if you're having a go at them or you're face palming them or you're face palming their quoted tweet or whatever. So it leaves that bit of confusion in there. So I think I did it to someone the other day and he replied with, "I hope you're doing that with me and not at me." I left it, but I should have sort of replied with, "Okay."
You are the angriest Twitter user that I know.
Yeah, I am pretty.
You are.
I am pretty. Yeah, I am pretty bad. Oh, I am bad at brands. Yeah, I'm definitely bad at attacking
everything.
Everyone. Pretty much. I did get
you're like a grumpy old man.
Well, I am definitely getting like that. Yeah, I'm the old "Hey at brand. Why do you do this?"
I actually have a Twitter mute for the phrase "hey space at" specifically for that reason.
Awesome. I'll have to add a comma or something. Or yo, I'll do different ones just so they appear in your timeline.
You're not the only one. A lot of people do, but I have a lot of... I mean, my Twitter mute list is gigantuan. I mean, it's huge.
I've added a few, yeah. I've added a few for certain celebrities that keep popping up that drive me nuts that people... Because they seem to be celebrities for no reason and they keep coming up in timelines and things because they've baked a cake or something. And you're like, oh, for Christ's sake. So it's not perfect, though. There's certain... Sometimes I've misspelt a word or whatever and so that's why it hasn't come up and then I've corrected it. But on occasion, there's certain stuff that I just can't stop coming up. And I don't know if it works in moments. I'm not sure if... I haven't tested it recently, but I thought at one point it wasn't working with Twitter Moments. So even though you were blocking the person or blocking the muting the words in your timeline and your mentions, if they were in a moment, it would still come up, which was really annoying. But they may have changed that.
Hmm.
But yeah, it's Twitter's funny. I just watched a video this morning that Jack Dorsey interview. It's only about 20 minutes. I think it's on Twitter somewhere on the Moments or whatever. And he was being asked about a load of different stuff about Twitter and, you know, why they haven't got more AI. Because apparently Instagram, I didn't know this, Instagram have got some AI system that will, like, stop your Instagram posts from being seen if they figure it's, you know, hate speech or whatever.
Huh.
Yeah, so in that interview, I think what he said was the AI bot will analyze what you post, and even though you will still see the post, it won't delete the post, so you will still see it and think that it's gone out there, but actually no one's seen it because they've not posted it because of what you said. I think that's what he said, basically. And he was asking, you know, why doesn't Twitter do more of this? And Jack Dorsey said, yeah, you're right. I mean, the whole reporting system, yeah, the whole reporting system in Twitter is based on the victim or other people reporting that. And then something happens. And I've reported a few tweets, you know, and usually they've come back and said they were, you know, found to be... Pretty much all of them, actually, but probably about one, I think, said it wasn't. But maybe if I've done 100, you know, literally maybe 5 have come back and said they didn't think it was an infringement. But for the rest, they've usually been pretty good and pretty quick. I remember when my wife got a haircut for charity and someone, you know, she's getting all of her hair cut off that she's grown for years to raise money for the Down Syndrome Association. And she ended up raising, I think, with the extra benefits and tax credits you get, I think she raised about 18 grand in the end, which is pretty good. And, you know, I was trying to get people to tweet about it. I was trying to get some celebs or whatever to retweet. And then this guy, it was the account for the girl who is her name 11 in Stranger Things, who's now left Twitter she's now left Twitter because she got hateful stuff said and all this stuff. But that account retweeted. And so a huge amount of likes were coming in and all this stuff were coming in. And there was one guy who responded with, he used the R word, which is just a horrible word. But he basically said, this is, you know, R. Why doesn't she do something else instead of trying to get credit for this? And it's like, what? And you're just a moron. So I basically reported that because I've used the R word and they got it deleted, got the tweet deleted, which was pretty cool. But yeah, and that was pretty quick. That was about 2 hours or something. So I was quite pleased with that.
See, I just don't really use Twitter, and it's. I mean, I always use Tweetbot, and that was fine. I can post stuff, I can see stuff in a logical order. I don't get Twitter polls or moments and stuff, but I don't really give a shit about that anyway. But then the changes they made to the API recently mean that it's no longer streaming. It's like a constant, you have to refresh it. And you can't see like notifications in terms of, like, not push notifications, because I don't care about that, but you can't see if someone's retweeted it or liked it or whatever it might be, which is kind of annoying. And so now I have to go to the Twitter website to see that stuff. So I'm using the Twitter website more, which I hate doing because I don't want to use their website, but I have to. And I think it was Dave Verwer, the guy that does iOS Dev Weekly, made a good point saying, you just know that some dickhead manager whose idea it was to suspend all of the third-party APIs and reduce them is now seeing higher engagement on the Twitter website because of it, and so he's probably going to get a nice big salary boost. And it's like, yeah, it's so annoying. I hate going to the website because I know I'm boosting their stats and sort of almost tacitly agreeing to it.
Well, the thing that's weird about all this is with Twitter as well is that there's this sort of huge. I mean, a lot of companies, you'll get, like in Microsoft, you'll get the Excel team, and you'll get the Word team, and there'll be some similarities, but some disparity in certain places. Or you'll get the Mac Word team and the Windows Word team, or whatever. And with Twitter, you know that there's people that work on the website, and there's people that will work on the native apps or whatever. But you've got this other thing, which is TweetDeck, which I'm now using on the desktop only because it's the only way I can get notifications and things now, and use the streaming or whatever. But there's this disparity of functionality, even though TweetDeck is a web app. You know, it is a web app in a native wrapper, because when it gets updates, it happens inside the app, because it's basically just refreshing the damn web pages.
It's just a browser.
Yeah, exactly. But there's this disparity of functionality. So on the website, you can do chain tweets. You can do the tweet storms. In the native app, you can do the tweet storms. In TweetDeck, you can't. In TweetDeck, you can schedule a tweet. On the website, I don't think you can yet. And on... I haven't tested that recently, but in the app you certainly can't. You can't schedule a tweet. So I don't really understand how that works, because surely, you know, there should be parity with these things, even though there are separate teams working on it. You know, the tweet storming thing's been a feature for months. I think maybe even a year. That you know, the little plus button that appears where you can chain them together into a thread. Which
I've literally never seen that.
Yeah, well, you can do it with replies, I think, but this is a more efficient way of doing
it. I don't use it.
Yeah, well, it's handy when you want to do a huge tirade of attacking things like I do. But the difference with doing it that way is that you post the tweets at the same time. So you don't do that. You don't post your first one, and then while you're trying to frantically type the second one, someone then replies to you and it sort of messes up the thread. Whereas this way, you can just do your five tweets in a row, and then you say publish, and it sticks all of them up at once, you know, and then it will appear in the timeline. It will say, here's the tweet, you know, here's the first tweet. And then underneath it will say, see thread. So you don't actually have to type the word thread, because it will tell people there's a thread. Depending on the client. But the other thing I was going to mention with this API changes is I've got a couple of bots running, which are little node apps that I wrote. One is for the TARDIS loo, which basically looks for keywords, bad jokes like TARDIS and things like that. And if someone says one of those words, I've got like this randomized thing that comes back with one of 20 different replies, you know.
Nice.
Yeah. So very silly. Got it blocked once. Someone reported it, and it got blocked, and I had to get it unblocked because it stopped responding to things. I was like, "What's going on?" And then the other one I've got is for my work that I do with the accelerator and stuff. I look for certain keywords and like tweets automatically, which you'll have noticed. And the side effect of this was a recent change I made, where if I'm added, and it has a little can't remember the name of this. There's a little library in there there's a sentiment engine in there that basically will look at the tweet that's been has the keyword, whether it's my name or whatever, and looks at what the sentiment is, if it's a positive or a negative. If it's a negative, don't do anything. If it's a positive, like it. So you'll have noticed that when you reply to me sometimes, pretty much when you reply to me on a tweet or you mention my name, it's liked almost within like a minute, or sometimes almost instantly, because this bot's running. Now this bot, this bot, interestingly, uses a Twitter library, which I can't remember the name of, but it is using the streaming, and neither of these bots have stopped working. So I don't know. I don't know if the API is fully down. I don't know if the streaming API is fully down yet, or if they've sort of told people it's being discontinued and certain ways of using it have been discontinued, but it's still there and it's going to be shut down, you know, at some point. Or I haven't really looked at the code, or whether this library is doing some fallback method, because as far as I'm concerned, I'm calling the events and calling the methods that invoke a new stream based on these keywords. But it's still working, and it's working pretty instantly. You know, if you tell a bad TARDIS joke and say TURDIS or Dr. Poo, you will get a reply within 30 seconds from the TARDIS loo. That's the way it works.
We'll look forward to trying that.
Yeah, so I think I did update the library because I thought, oh, you know, it's going to be broken, so I'll update the library and change everything so it uses the Activity API and everything. And then something broke. They changed something in the library, and my code stopped working anyway. So I just reverted to the old library and just left it. And I just figure I'll leave it, and when it actually does break in the end, I'll change it. But it is frustrating because I used the Twitter app on macOS until they killed it, which hopefully maybe they'll come back next year with Marzipan. I switched to Tweetbot. I think I just bought, is it Tweetbot 4 was the new one? It just came out with the new one.
Yeah.
Just bought the new one, had the lovely multi-column stuff, and you could do more things with it, and it was really, really nice. And then literally Twitter hit us with the bloody API changes, and so I've begrudgingly switched to TweetDeck at the moment.
Yeah,
it's frustrating.
It's annoying, but it's their business. They can run it how they want, can't they?
That's the other thing, yeah, exactly. There seems to be a lot of hatred for the native Twitter app on iOS. I don't mind it too much, but a lot of people just don't like it.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Why is that?
Well, it's not native, is it? I mean, it's just a horrible web wrappery thingy-bob.
What, the actual iOS app?
Oh, the iOS app.
I meant the iOS app.
Ages. Yeah. I don't think I've used it in years.
I like seeing things like Moments just to see what it is being talked about.
I think people hate it so much because their apps used to be so good. Like, they literally defined certain parts of iOS, like pull to refresh was a Twitter thing. And so it's
true.
Sad seeing a good app go bad, I guess.
Yeah, it was Tweety, wasn't it, I think? Was it Tweety originally?
Yes.
Lauren something, I think his name was. Lauren Brisher, I want to say.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, he did pull to refresh. Then he got bought, or he got basically acqui-hired, didn't he, to Twitter. That became the Twitter app. And then the pull to refresh suddenly became everywhere. That was a great...
I think he even patented it. And then there was a big outcry about that. And he's like, well, I'm allowed to patent it. Doesn't mean I'm going to use the patent.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I came up with it, so that's mine.
No, that was a great... That was one of those moments where that was an inspired UE feature, you know. Absolute genius. And again, an example of where almost like, I think Android at the time or other people were like, no, we can't copy it because it just looks too bad to copy it. So we want to do our own version of it, you know. So what have they got? They've got squeezing the phone that does something now. I think you can squeeze the pixels and it invokes their assistant. You actually squeeze the phone. I can't really make fun of that because we've still got Shake to Undo on iOS. I used the other day.
Yeah, I had to. My wife needs to undo something, and I was like, "Shake your phone." She's like, "What?" Just trust me. Just shake it. She did it. She's like, "What the hell is that? When's that been there?" It's like since iOS 3.
Brilliant.
Yeah, speaking of copying and Google, do you see the thing that if you use what's Google's not AI thing, but like the augmented reality thing that can detect items, like machine learning thing. Google Vision.
Oh, something like that, I don't know.
If you use that on the Pixel 3, it says it's an iPhone.
What?
Yeah, it thinks it's an iPhone.
Oh, that's funny. That's almost as good as celebrities when they tweet from their new... when they tweet pictures from their new phones or whatever. And everyone goes into... because it used to be able to go into the Twitter app. I don't think the Twitter app tells you anymore. Tweetbot used to, and maybe still does. And on the website you can, I think. But you used to be able to see, it would say, you know, posted by Twitter for whatever. And the native Twitter app doesn't do that anymore. But that's always funny. That's annoying. Yeah. The new Samsung's so cool, and it's like posted on iPhone. Yeah. Whoops.
Except for my iPhone.
And you could just imagine. You just imagine, like, you know, when you see signs anywhere that say, you know, don't jump into the lion den naked. You know, there's a story behind it. All kinds of stuff like this. And it must be these notes that go out from PR companies must get longer and longer. You know. Firstly, you got to take a good photo. Now it's almost like you got to take a good photo on the phone. Do not, I repeat, do not use your iPhone to take the photo. We will not pay you if that word appears. Love stuff like that. Speaking of iPhones as well, you had something about Apple Watch data activation story.
Well, I think we were going to talk about it last time, but then we just didn't.
That's right.
We ran out of time.
Yeah.
But it was just up a lava getting it all set up this time. I mean, it was last year when we first got the cellular Apple Watch, it took ages to get it to actually activate. And I had to phone them up and do a load of stuff to get it sorted. And it took ages. And then eventually it all got sorted. But it was it took a long time.
Yeah.
This time you're supposed to be able to just basically set up your new watch and say copy the data plan over, but that didn't work. Like the EE, we both use EE in the UK. I think you can get Vodafone for the Apple Watch now, but
yeah, you can. Yeah,
it used to be just EE, and it didn't work. And you went through a whole thing of phoning them up and doing all kinds of stuff. And I was like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. I just took out a new plan, and then I cancelled my old one online. I'm just like, yeah, just cancel that one, get the new one. Yes, I've maybe spent £3 because I had to give a certain amount of notice and there'll be a bit of overlap, but I don't want to be having to ring them.
Yeah, it was
so it was just a hassle, really.
It was, and what was frustrating was I posted a tweet a couple of days before saying I hope EE have got some preparation of what's going to happen, because obviously this is the first year where people will already have devices, and you know how's that going to work, so I hope it's smooth. And it was I don't think they replied to me. But I think they could have been better at letting people know, because my assumption was, okay, you know, you've got what I didn't know. I think the way my process was that I unpaired the phone, which then backs up your phone to, the watch, which backs up your watch to the phone, and then you do an iCloud backup, which backs up both. Now, what I didn't realize was I didn't need to do the unpairing bit, because, and I think you may have gone through this. I'm not sure if you mentioned this, but if you just set up your new phone, so if you get your new phone, you've made you don't even need to do the backup. You know, all this stuff, I was doing all this preemptive stuff. Whereas if you get your new phone, fire it up, put it near the other one, it will say, this looks like it's a new phone, or your old phone will say, it looks like you've got a new phone. Do you want to upgrade
it? All over.
Yeah, and it takes care of everything. It takes care of the watch. So it will say, it doesn't look like you've done a recent backup. Do you want to do one now? So while it's doing that process, it will do a new backup. Then it will complete that and say, it looks like you've got a watch paired to your old phone. Do you want to bring that watch across? And I think it takes care of that without unpairing the watch, you know, without having to wipe the watch, I think. There's lots of cool stuff that happens there, which, again, is that classic example of I fell into that trap of just making assumptions because I didn't trust the process, you know. But with the Apple Watch, with the EE thing, what it came down to and what was the most frustrating thing is that EE didn't tell me that when you go into... So once you've got everything paired and set up, I went into the watch app and said enable mobile data. And what it doesn't say is turn your Wi-Fi off, which is what it should do. Because the assumption should be that everyone's sitting at home with their Wi-Fi. They're not out on the road upgrading their Apple Watch. Why would they be doing that? And all it had to say was connecting, because it just came up with this. It was obviously a web view of some kind. And it basically should have said a little header above saying, you know, please turn off your Wi-Fi to enable this to work. And if that had happened, everything would have been fine. Because the other thing that it would have done is it would have come up with this web page and said, you've already got a plan. Do you want to transfer that plan to a new device? Or do you want to add this watch as a new plan? And then I would have done the transfer thing and it all would have worked well. But it didn't. I was just sitting there looking at this connected thing, not knowing what was going on. Lots of other people were saying the same thing. I phoned them up. Long story short, they were telling me I had to repair the phone while Wi-Fi was off. And I'm just like, I'm sorry, I'm technical, I'm not an expert on how the watch pairs. I know it uses Bluetooth, but I'm pretty sure I shouldn't have to go through the half hour pairing process again because I'm trying to activate mobile data. And what it basically came down to was, yes, turn the Wi-Fi off. It then uses the EE network, which for somehow then tells EE, based on the fact that you're on their network, what phone you've got, and it does the little thing. Do you want to upgrade or do you want to transfer? I said yes. But then the annoying thing is it then says you now need to phone us as the final step. And basically the final step is you have to phone them up and you have to give them the, I can't remember the name of it, but it's the really long ECIM or D or what, ECMI, whatever code that's on the Apple, that's on the Apple Watch box, or you can get it in the general about. And you have to give them that code. And that basically reprograms their record because it's like an eSIM. That's, you know, the Apple Watch has got an eSIM. That's how it works. And so what they're doing is essentially taking that string that you've just given them and pasting it into some back-end admin system that then now associates that eSIM with that device on your account. And then it takes, for me, it took probably about 15 minutes after she said she'd done it for that data screen when I went back into the app to appear, because it would suddenly say first of all, it said nothing because it would say the connecting thing, and then it would connect and say, do you want to upgrade? But at this stage, it was saying to me, you know, we're already got your request to do the plan or whatever, please wait type thing. I went into about 3 minutes later, just came out, went in the same screen again, and suddenly the screen turned into a native screen that had like a table view and said EE plan, but it said not active. So obviously something was happening. And then about 5 minutes later, I went in and it was all there and it worked. My wife's took a little bit longer for some reason, but I had to go through the same phone call. And I literally, you know, have you paired over, have you paired it while on the, you know, while Wi-Fi was off? And I was like, look, it's not that, please. I did this conversation earlier today with someone else. All I need you to do is take this code. And then she had to refer me to a supervisor. And it's like, oh my God. So their preparation was not great.
No. And also, I mean, because it should have been working anyway, because technically you could get a new watch and want to add it or swap it out anyway.
Yeah.
Within the year. It's not like, oh, no one's going to upgrade their watch. Or, you know, change it or whatever. Because if you got a new watch because your old one broke, you'd have to have gone through the same process, but, you know, during the year. So it's weird that they weren't prepared for it at all.
And it's weird that if you connect to the EE network, it's obviously, because it's going through the network, it knows your device ID. So it can pick up your device's SIM ID and everything. The phone is synced with the watch. Okay, it's not synced with the new watch. Well, no, it is synced with the new watch because at that point I was. So the phone should be able to get the ID of the watch and then surely should be able to relay that somehow. But maybe it's an iOS thing. I don't know. Maybe iOS is not able to relay the eSIM code from the watch through to the network. I don't know. It just seemed really weird that it wasn't automatic. Because I can't remember what it was like last year. Because I thought when we activated the data plan last year for the first time, we didn't have to phone anyone, did we?
No, I did, because I did it on day one and it just didn't work.
Oh, okay.
Just like you just constantly got loading spinners and stuff went wrong and
it was
a mess.
So that
day one.
So I think I did it and it did work straight away. I must have hit a gap in the network where, you know, I managed to get through. And I definitely remember not speaking to anyone, and it worked. So the system must be in place for them to get this code. Maybe it's just not there to replace the code. Maybe someone manually has to do that.
You shouldn't have to turn off Wi-Fi in order to know what network you're on.
No.
Especially when it's the first-party app. Like the Apple Watch app itself should be able to say what network you're on.
Yeah.
And validate it and do whatever it needs to do.
Yeah, I don't remember doing that. Like, I don't remember even switching the Wi-Fi off last year. All I remember is going in and saying, enable mobile data, and it worked. And it sort of did something. It said, you know, this is going to be added to your plan or whatever. It was like, yes, done. Please wait for activation. It could take 24 hours, and it took like 10 minutes. You know, it was done. It was just very odd. I had one other issue with the upgrade process, which was my photos. I had a really weird thing with the Photos app, and it was that horrible, horrible moment where you're dicking around with photos and deleting photos and thinking, I really hope I'm not deleting 44,000 pictures here. But, you know, I've upgraded my phone constantly. You know, I've never set up as a new phone. I think I set up once about 2 years ago when there was that whole battery gate issue. Not battery gate, but it was a battery issue where phones were sort of dying at 60%. And then they wouldn't power up again unless they were plugged in. And when they plugged in again, they were 60% and they'd last the rest of the day. You know, it was really weird. And that I had to wipe my phone because they claimed that was the solution and it wasn't. And then eventually they gave me a new iPhone 7 and it was all fine. But I'd lost my... That was my new sort of restore point from that point onwards. And so I'd restored everything. And for some reason, I thought it would be sensible because I've got that optimized storage for photos. I thought it would be sensible. I've just bought a 512.
Don't you have like a 512 gig phone there?
Yeah, so I've got a 512 gig phone. And I figure I might as well have all of them. Yeah, why not? So I enable this option, and then basically you get that thing at the bottom of the photos thing which says, you know, downloading 44,000 photos, and it would slowly go down, but it was taking days, and then it would seem to get stuck, and it just wouldn't be downloading any more photos. The thumbnails were all there, and if you tap on them, you could see it, and it would download it if it needed it, but it didn't seem to be making much progress. And I know it's 44,000 pictures, but I've got, you know, 300 meg connection.
It'd be fairly quick.
Yeah, and so, you know, a couple of weeks later, it was still stuck, and I was getting a bit pissed off with it, and so I went through that thing of, okay, I'm going to turn the option off to optimize and see what happens. And then I turned it on again, and it was just getting into a weird mode. So I thought, okay, I'm going to try and delete everything. So I turned off the iCloud photos. I turned off Photo Stream, basically turned off everything. And then all of a sudden, all these photos start disappearing off the phone. You see the numbers going down. And I was thinking, okay, I'm hoping this is okay. Didn't say anything about deleting it anywhere else, and my other devices were okay. And I've got all my photos downloaded on the Mac anyway. But obviously I don't want it to sort of go back up. You know, even though I've got them downloaded, I don't want it to suddenly delete them off the Mac. No. So anyway, it comes down to all the photos are supposedly gone, but there was sort of 9,000 or something left. And I'm like, what? How can there be 9,000 photos left when I've just deleted everything? Are these 9,000 synced? So I'm checking some of the photos. They all seem to be synced. So I try enabling it all again. Now, instead of downloading all the photos that I wanted to download, it's trying to upload the 9,000, which are already uploaded. So that was taking ages. I'm like, this is a nightmare. So finally, I wipe everything out. I download a couple of apps in the App Store, and I managed to wipe all these photos off, except 900 photos now, that now won't be deleted. They're just blank. They say 900 photos on the device, but they're all grey boxes, and if you try and tap them, nothing happens. So I was in this weird limbo state, and I think what was happening was that there was a background process still going on to delete photos, but it hadn't got through it. You know, there was the iOS photo deletion, and there was also this other app that I'd got because I thought nothing was going on. And my long story leads to a point of, I don't think there's enough progress or indicators within the Photos app or anywhere within the device to tell you what is happening when you do this stuff. You know, there's no, I think there used to be something in the iCloud settings when you went in and you enabled iCloud photos, there used to be something that used to say uploading photos. It did it on the Mac as well, because you used to be able to pause it, and you know, you could say
It still does. It's just at the very, very bottom of the list.
Yeah, okay, no, there's that one. Yeah, there's that one, but there used to be something in the iCloud settings as well, which was a bit more specific about what was going on, whereas that one at the bottom wasn't saying deleting. It wasn't giving me like any status. It just said 900 photos. There wasn't any progress of anything that was happening. So I just didn't know. So I just left it. I didn't do anything. And it was a really weird feeling sort of the rest of the day. You know, I didn't have any photos, and I didn't know if I should take any photos because I didn't have anything turned on to upload them. So I just sort of left it. And then all of a sudden, like late in the afternoon, I checked the device and they'd all gone. Everything was gone. Everything was zero. So I turned it all back on again. But I've still left it now on Optimize because I started to download them, and then I looked at the stats, and I've got 360 gig of photos and videos. And I thought, I've just bought a 512 gig device, which is great. I really don't want to fill, you know, 75-80% of it with photos when I don't really need to, because, you know, most of them, I only need access to the recent ones really all the time. So I just left it on Optimize and thought, screw it. It was a bad idea in the first place. It's a lot. I just didn't know it was so many. It was crazy. Yeah, I think it's 4,000. I think I've got 4,000 videos or something, and 44,000 photos. And a lot of the videos now are 4K, obviously. But I've just changed my settings to 30 frames per second. Is it 30? Yeah, instead of 60. Because I don't know if you heard this, but there's this thing that happens with the XS. I nearly said the XS. Where if you do 30 frame 4K, it takes an extra frame in between that it uses for some analysis of the image to do HDR stuff. So if you actually... So if you film in 4K at 30 frames a second, you actually get better images, especially in low light, or better video than you would if you do 4K at 60 frames a second, which is interesting. And so I figured, you know, 30 is fine for stuff I need, and obviously takes up less space.
Makes sense. Yeah, it's I had something good with the iPhone XS camera the other week, because we talked about it a couple of weeks ago when we said how much better it is, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. But I got to try it out properly because I went to the Harry Potter studio tour.
Oh, yeah. Never been.
And that place is pretty dark inside. You've got like the potions classrooms and you've got all the sets and everything. It's pretty low light. And the pictures I took in it were amazing. Looks so much better than, I mean, most DSLRs that I've tried using. And I had a friend that I said that to, and he's like, oh, well, you're still not using your DSLR correctly. I was like, well, to get the photos I got, you'd have to probably have a tripod.
Yeah.
A very, very, very long exposure. You'd need a whole lot of equipment with you to do it. And this was literally just, I held the phone up, went, click, done. And took the picture perfectly. So it's very, very impressive. But I posted a few photos on Twitter. It's a great camera.
It's really
good in low light.
Yeah, the big thing, I haven't done many low light photos at the moment, but the big thing I've noticed is just outside daylight stuff. You don't get that, you know, contrast blowout that you get with, you know, the sky, and just really nice. You know, point at that. I did a photo where I pointed it at the sun in the morning and just got a nice photo, and you can see the shape of the sun.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get some horrible crap all over the screen and everything whited out. It's definitely doing some clever stuff. There's probably some improvements they can do through software, through the AI stuff. I heard stuff about the new Pixels. The new Pixels have got a nice feature where if you take a photo, it obviously takes loads of photos, a bit like live photo thing, and it will analyze the photo using the AI stuff and say it's a photo of a person. I think it was John Gruber talking about a photo that had been taken where he took a photo of this woman and she sort of looked down just as the shutter went. So as the photo was taken, it was like, oh, that's not a great photo because she suddenly looked down. And then the app immediately, as soon as you take the photo, goes, this looks like a better version of this photo. Would you like this one instead? And it's actually found the better frame where she's looking, and, you know, it's looked at her eyes and seen that she's got her eyes open, and it's made that comparison.
Cool.
And then you just say yes, and that's your photo. And someone said, well, you can do that with live photos because you can pick the keyframe, but I don't think it's the same quality as the photo. I think the live video is 1080 or something.
Yeah, because it's actually video.
Yeah.
It's not the photos. But then maybe they've improved that. I don't know.
I don't know.
They have.
But that's pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, it's just they did underplay it in the keynote because it is a phenomenal camera. And that combined with the AI stuff, it's much easier to take really good photos now. And once this, it'd be interesting to see what this portrait mode looks like with the live preview in 12.1. I haven't installed it. But that'll be interesting.
Yeah, that's true.
And
I've not installed the beta yet, so
is that bother group FaceTime
little ones like that?
Yeah, group FaceTime and other things. And I've just noticed my little TweetDeck icon my TweetDeck cog has lit up because there's some bizarre update that they don't tell you what's changed. Great. Anything else?
No, I don't think so. Not from me. It's been a fairly slow couple of weeks, really. I mean, I guess we're gonna see if we haven't already. I've bit behind in my feeds, like the iPhone XR must be going on pre-order tomorrow, so I guess all the reviews for that will come out next week.
Yeah, it's been weird though, hasn't it?
They'll probably come out on the Wednesday, won't they?
Yeah, it just feels like it feels like the excitement of the launch and everything is gone. You know, it's like we've all got our phones now and we're getting on with it, but then all of a sudden another phone now is coming out, and so there's going to be a bit of another boost.
That'll probably be very popular with a lot of people.
Yeah, I guess it was
it's a very nice phone.
Yeah, they reckon that will be the big seller, and based on the fact that the price is, I think, higher than previous models, it will raise that, you know, it'll raise the price per unit.
Well, it's average. Cheaper than the iPhone XS was at launch, isn't it? No, sorry, cheaper than the iPhone X was last year.
Yeah, but I think is it more than the eight, pretty sort of eight or seven?
Eight was,
yeah, they're definitely pushing,
not that much more.
They're definitely pushing the prices up a little bit, but it's, yeah, I mean, if I didn't need or want the 10, it's a nice phone. I like the fact that it comes in different colours and everything. It's pretty cool. I like it.
Yeah. It's a good size as well, between the regular and the plus.
Yeah, and isn't the irony that it's got better battery life? Because
it's not an OLED.
Yeah, it's got better battery life than the XS, not the XS Max. I think it's the XS because it's obviously bigger, which means the battery's bigger. It's nothing to do with any of the tech in there. It's just the fact that it's got more juice in it. But yeah, that's the irony of the situation.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so you get people, my XR's got more battery than yours. Oh god, yes, of course it has, because it's a bigger battery.
Like, if I didn't have the XS, Well, I suppose, yeah, I think if it weren't for the XS Max, I would have gone for the XR. Like, if they just did the XS and they did the XR and there was no XS Max, I'd have gone for the XR. But as it is, I much prefer the XS Max and the better cameras and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But it's a good phone. A very, very good phone. It'd be the one that I would recommend to people if someone, you know, asked me what phone they should get. I'd say XR.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that they've done that thing where they basically, apart from the camera and the screen, but the screen's fairly irrelevant, really. I mean, well, not that I've seen one, but it is pretty much not a huge deal. But the camera, for me, would be a big deal to go down to one lens again. But other than that, the fact that it's the same is astonishing. You know, you'd think that they would have done something, you know, it wouldn't be as fast or it wouldn't be this. But I guess that would be more difficult. You know, it would be actually quite annoying because...
hard to sell, like the 5C was.
Yeah, well, it's got to be easier to have... If the internals, apart from the camera, if the rest of the internals are pretty much the same, it's got to make it easier to manufacture because you can have the same line punching out these motherboards that have got, you know, and the batteries are going to be the same. Well, okay, they're not the same, the bigger, but you know what I mean? You know, the production line could be very similar in terms of the tooling. Whereas if you've got to go, no, we're definitely going to give them the older processor, it just seems a bit spiteful.
Unless you've got a load of old processors lying around.
Yeah, well, they might not want to use them in case they've got that little Chinese chip on it, though.
Oh. You know,
might not be able to. You don't want, you know, you don't want that international universal translator relaying everything to China automatically through a separate 5G Wi-Fi network coming off a chip the size of a pin. You know, doing automatic face recognition, listening to your conversations.
Really just.
I love all this stuff.
I don't know how they thought that was a good idea, but yeah. Anyway.
Cool.
Good. Well, it'll probably be a little while till our next podcast.
Yeah, when are you due?
Red Dead Redemption 2 comes out next week, so that's going to be taking up most of my time.
Right.
And then the baby comes about a week or two after.
Well, and that, well, yeah, then it should be...
Well,
then
I mean, we're firmly in. It could be, I mean, it could be happening now, for all I know.
Then it should... Upstairs. Yeah, then it should be interesting.
Yeah.
welcome to my world.
Wish me luck.
Yeah, good luck.
No matter how bad it gets, I know that I can always look at myself and go, well, at least I don't have four more of them like this.
Yeah, it gets interesting when you have to buy buses for transporting everybody around and, What's going to get really interesting is that is when Star Wars Land is ready, and I want to take. Well, I want to go, but I also want to take them, and it's going to be breaking the bank to get everybody on a flight. It's like, well, do you don't.
Especially if you go to the Star Wars hotel as well,
yeah,
because that is not going to be cheap.
Yeah,
where they've got the whole, like, not augmented reality. I don't know what they call it, but live action-y. You like dress up and you sleep in things that look like a Star Wars spaceship. And
oh, that would be insane.
You get asked to come and help fire the lasers at certain points and God knows what else. It's like a whole 3-day immersive thing. And people are like, oh yeah, I'm going to go to that next year when it opens. I'm like, you're not. It's going to cost a shit ton.
Yeah.
And it's going to be booked up for years.
I can see that being insane. Maybe they'll have left home and got jobs by then, and then I can go. In my
go in your frail
with my walking frame, yeah.